We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Finishing strong here in the fourth quarter here in the program. Our Need to Know brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. Not just incredible technology, all of your home technology that's easy to use. Their client education and, of course, great technology also comes with intuitive abilities. Whether you want a great in-home theater, you want rocket-fast Wi-Fi all over your house, you want to be able to listen to great tunes out on your deck, your patio, your screened-in porch, Applause Custom Sight and Sound can give it to you at your home and your business. ApplauseTheater.com. That's where you can find them online. ApplauseTheater.com. 20 years, almost 20 years in business in an industry that most companies don't last to. Call my guys at Applause Custom Sight and Sound today. Find them online at applausetheater.com. Let's start with a little need to know. You need to know where it is. You should go to watch the Masters. One Todd Lebo is over at Nick and Jake's, one of the iconic locations here in town. Great partner, great friend of Sports Radio 810 WHB, the folks over at Nick and Jake's. Todd, let's first get to the fact that you have been tracking the story with Britt Reed and making some calls, as you do, as one of the senior investigative reporters around this town. Still nothing really concrete to report, but this is, we're quite a ways down. What did you find out where we are with things today?
Well, this has moved on from the Kansas City Police. The Jackson County prosecutor told them a few weeks ago that all inquiries should go through them. And today a spokesperson for the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office basically says they're reviewing the case. So they've got the case. They don't have any details about a real timeline of when this is going to come to charges or not charges or whatever. You recall this happened way back the first week of February. February 4th is when the accident happened, just a few days before the Super Bowl. And they have not given any details. We had that kind of incident report right out of the chute. We don't have any toxicology report or any police report. The police have finished their investigation. They have now given it to the Jackson County prosecutors. They have the case. They're reviewing it. They have not set a timeline on where they're going to either come to charges or not come to charges. But it's moving along, but it's moving along rather slowly for a lot of people on the outside looking in that this has been 2 months now, and they haven't even got to a part where someone's going to get charged yet.
And we talked about this earlier, Todd. You know, the first of all, the defense attorney is kind of a big gun defense attorney, right? So this is not a guy who doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he's got every club in the bag as to how to defend his client. So it's probably not shocking. This is going to be somewhat of a chess match, I would assume. The prosecutors are going to be making sure that they're dotting I's and crossing T's, because they're not going up against an amateur. Is that right?
Yeah. You don't want to make a mistake if you're on the prosecuting side on this, because it will probably not go well for you. And it's not like they can, a defense attorney just can't like make something magically go away, but they can make it be a little more difficult to jump through all the hoops to get the interviews they need, to get any sort of warrants they need to get information. And it's my understanding that Britt Reed has some of the best attorneys, or the best representation you can get around Kansas City. So he's got that working for him. And the other side of it is, we know there's a little girl who's still not well, who was injured in this accident. And we saw the GoFundMe page that was set up for them. We saw the Chiefs. The only thing they've said publicly about this is they were providing support to the family. It was a few days after the accident. A lot of things at play here on this. So I think as much as people want to know things right away, it's going to take a little while to get there. But the update today is the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office has this, and then we will see where it ends up from there. Don't look for a police report to come out anytime soon. And even when they maybe send charges, it may not be a full police report. It could be redacted, or it could be a few pages of it. You know, this a police report like this could be hundreds of pages long. I went down to that press conference at the police station, a month and a half ago, where they kind of talked about the investigation and all the work they go through to put this in there. There will be a lot of details in this, because this is a pretty complicated deal. But the story today is that the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office has this, and they're deciding whether or not they're going to press charges at this point. And if they don't, that doesn't mean, you know, it's out of the woods. They could drop it down to the Kansas City Municipal Court. I mean, you know, you start at the top, the county, and then you work yourself down, depending on what the police want to do.
Todd, you've covered a lot of legal proceedings, dealing with the sports world. Does the slow process that's going on, the slow nature of this, lead you to believe that there is an indictment coming, or that, no, they're struggling to find information to have an indictment?
I don't know if I have a good enough guess on that. I think you could think about that a couple different ways. I mean, they have sort of an admission at the scene from what the incident report we saw before.
Right.
But there's a lot of things at play here, as I said. You know, there's a civil side of this as well from the family's point. You know, that they're not the ones that the family is not someone who's going to press charges on someone. But they certainly have racked up a lot of medical bills and it could be pain and suffering for this family. So there's a side there, and I look every once in a while at the Facebook page and the GoFundMe. You're not getting a lot of updates on that either. So I think they've probably been told by their counsel, let's not talk about this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, interesting. All right, so stay tuned as we get more development. Todd Lebo's been covering the story from the get-go. We'll get more information. As soon as we get more information, we will give it to you. Todd, the golf, the Masters is going on. And, by the way, I'm reminded every year just how, you know, first of all, we should probably give kudos to 5 months ago when they made the course look, pretty amazing during the fall.
Yeah.
But just how incredibly stunning the visual look of this tournament is. And of course, Nick and Jake's huge on the golf. They love the golf, they love the Masters, you know, $1.50 sandwiches, drink specials. It is really an iconic place here in Kansas City to go watch the Masters. What all we got going on down there at Nick and Jake's?
Well, people here, the bar is filling up and they're waiting for another eagle on 13 or 15. We've had three today while we're on the air. John Rahm came up lame on his putt. A lot of groans here when that happened a little while ago. But if someone gets an eagle on 13 or 15 while I'm here until 6 o'clock and you're here in the bar, $10 gift certificate, gift card to come back to Nick and Jake's and have some fun. So that's worth it just to be here for that. Watch the golf. If you don't get here today, they'll have this on all weekend long. They love golf here at Nick and Jake's. And that Masters menu is going. I had a pimento and cheese sandwich, and I also had some sort of dessert that they're going to have for the Kentucky Derby that Kevin Timmons brought over, which I shouldn't have had because it was very tasty. But they'll have a big Derby party here too. So come on by Nick and Jake's. I'll be here till 6. The golf's going to go past 6. People have a good time here. Get yourself a little dinner. And if you get here real quick, I just saw Shane Summers come in. That's star-studded affair. Shane Summers is here at Nick and Jake's as well. So come on by and say hello. I'm at 135th and Metcalf. I'll be here until 6 o'clock at Nick and Jake's. It's a tradition unlike any other. Sports Radio 810 and Nick and Jake's.
Yeah, absolutely. Much love for the folks over there at Nick and Jake's. Great friends of Sports Radio 810 WHB partners. And I know their passion for Kansas City, the passion for sports, passion for golf, and, of course, passion for the community. I know they do a lot when it comes to the charitable side of things. So Nick and Jake's, if you want to check out the Masters, that is the spot. Todd, thanks so much, buddy. We appreciate it, my friend. Enjoy your time there at Nick and Jake's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Okay, Seren. Enjoy the weekend.
All right. You too, buddy. Todd Lebo there giving us the very latest on what's going on with the Brent Reed case. It is in the hands of the prosecuting attorney as we speak right now. Let's get you some other things you need to know here as there is other news out there besides just the Masters, which is going great guns right now as we speak. A little college basketball news today. If you missed it earlier, we reported Jalen Wilson entering his name or we're echoing the report. I don't want to say that we broke a story on that. But Jalen Wilson is going to enter his name into the NBA draft, not hiring an agent, so he can still withdraw his name. Ochai Agbaji declared for the draft yesterday, so something to consider. I don't know if anybody else was watching the tournament when it happened, but USC and Gonzaga, when they played, Bert Smith, the referee, just collapsed and fell. And it was one of the scarier things we've seen on TV. Just fell backwards like you would fall if you were doing like a backflop into a swimming pool. He was out, lights out, and banged his head on the floor. It was really difficult to watch. Ended up being okay. He came to. They took him off on a stretcher. Today he told the Indianapolis Star that fall saved his life because it turns out he had a blood clot in his lung. So had he not fallen, he may not have known about that, and he could have died. So what was a scary thing to watch ended up being an absolute lifesaver. Gonzaga, who is most people's preseason number one next year, depends on who they're going to get back. Joel Ayayi, one of their best young freshmen, has entered the draft, and he has hired an agent. So that's a shot across the bow. No word on Drew Timmy yet. They've got a great recruiting class. It looks like is going to come together next year, but Ayayi, who was going to be one of the big guys they were going to count on, is absolutely headed to the draft. He's hired an agent. That's going to do it right now for our need to know. When we come back, we will talk to our man, Kevin Harlan. Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. We are finishing strong here in the 5 o'clock hour. As we always like to do, we turn to the voice of America, CBS, TNT, Westwood One, the voice of Campbell's Chunky Soup, the face of great clips, the conscience of the NBAstore.com, the man behind fanatics.com, and of course, the voice you hear on NBA 2K21. He's even got his own IMDb page and two CBS Sports Blazers, the great Kevin Harlan. Kevin, how are you, buddy?
What is that? I'm doing fine, Seren. Good to be on. What's that page? What is that?
IMDb, which is So it's an app, or you can just go to their website, imdb.com, and IMDb is, I don't know if it stands for, it's something that's like something movie database. And so if like you go and you click, like, pick a movie, tell me any movie you want.
Dr. No.
All right, I'm typing it in. 1962, it starred Sean Connery, Ursula Andress, Bernard Lee, Joseph Weissman, Jack Lord, Anthony Dawson. It has a rating on it. Action, adventure, thriller. It gives what kind of movie it is, how long it is, when, who wrote it, all the information about it. And then you go down a rabbit hole, because if you're like, oh, Sean Connery's in it, let me click on Sean Connery. Then you can go to Sean Connery's filmography, which is all of his movies. You can scroll through and see every movie that he made.
Extensive, right? Right.
Yeah, yeah. You have an IMDb page.
I did not know that. I didn't know what that stood for. I thought it was some like weird website or something.
Well, I heard you on, you know, which I'm sure the NBA asked you to do it. The NBA, watching the game last night and your voice on it. I'm like, I was like making a list, and I'm like, I'm going to see. I wonder if Kevin and I searched video game. I wanted to make sure you know you were still doing the video game. And it took me to it, like one of the first things that pops up is Kevin Harlan, IMDb. I was like,
no kidding.
Wow.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know what that means, but I'm going to check it out. I wrote it down here as you were saying it. I'll figure it out. Yeah, we're doing these games. We've talked briefly about these NBA games. I'm doing them from home.
Right.
The other announcers are doing them from studios in their markets, whether they're New York or in California or down in Atlanta, where the Turner Studios are. But they gave me the option, you know, I could go to, I think they said, which is weird, a place up in Liberty where they could set up because it had a certain whatever to do that, or I could do it from home. And, of course, I chose home.
Sure.
And what we're finding is that it works, but there's a delay on there. It's about a 2-second delay. So last night, Kawhi comes in, he explodes off the wing, goes down the lane, and basically in about 2 strides, you know, jackhammers one in, puts in a big dunk. But you could hear it, you could see it, but what I saw, you know, being at home after it's gone up and down about 3 different roundabouts to get
right
to me where I can see it, it's about 2-second delayed, and sure enough, it's like I was looking up in the fourth section of the arena, and then, oh, there's a game going on, and, oh, look what he did. He just, like, I wasn't paying attention. So it's a little bit disconcerting. I'm not sure how much longer this is going to go on, but right now it's bothering me because I get texts from buddies around the country, and they're saying, are you at the game? Are you in a studio? Like, they can't figure out why this is going on, and that is the simple reason. I'm at home and relying on home Wi-Fi, which sometimes is not the best.
I know that Nate has done a number of the – I don't think he goes up to that studio you're talking about in Liberty. And I think, you know, so he's done road Sporting Kansas City games that way. And, you know, it's obviously a cost to not have to send a whole crew up there. It's and, you know, I think it if they get it fast enough, though, Kevin, if we can get to, we know that everything just gets faster and faster and faster, more and more information, quicker and quicker and quicker. Is it something that you think is the permanent future, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whenever they get it to where you can instantaneously see him throw it down and give one of your signature calls where you blow the roof off the game with, you know, with the excitement and the call on it? Do you think that they, if they can get it instantaneous, that this may be the permanent plan?
I'm not sure because there's also a delay with me and my analyst, whoever it is. And last night was Reggie Miller. And we, in fact, talked earlier in the day during our production meeting about, you know, I'll try to really have my sentences go down with a period. And then I'll lay out for about 3 or 4 seconds, which will give you an opening. The problem is that he has sometimes a hard time gauging when I'm done. He's on a delay, too. So that, like, doubles the ante of you know, what we're dealing with. And it just has a hard time having any kind of cohesion. And the NBA is so fast back and forth that it really is more just a play-by-play medium until there's a stoppage of play, and then you can have the analysts come in. That's why I love college basketball so much, because from a play-by-play standpoint, college basketball has the perfect clock, 30 seconds. It's got the perfect pace because these kids aren't as fast. They're not as athletic. They're not as quick. And so most of them don't run back and forth baseline to baseline. They, you know, will have a slower pace. So there is room, natural room, in that basketball call where you can, you know, say if I'm doing Maryland and Michigan, and, you know, you can talk, you can give a quick note about Maryland's season. They've won 5 of 6, and here they come the other way with a 10-point lead. And then lay out for like 15 to 20 seconds, the analyst can come in, and then you've got the last, like, 9 to do kind of a hard play-by-play, and it really fits well. The rhythm in college basketball is so much more conducive to a 2- and a 3-man crew. In the NBA, it really is play-by-play heavy, because if you don't do the play-by-play or you let the analyst come in after every score, they're racing the other way and putting the ball up with about 4 seconds gone in the shot clock. And then the analyst is left calling the play-by-play and the shot, which if it's a big one, you don't want the analyst doing that. That's the play-by-play guy's realm. So we're really all kind of feeling our way through the dark here. It's not comfortable. It brings, I think, a lot of frustration among the fans. It's the best we can do until the pandemic, you know, is under control, and we're heading in that direction, it looks like. Right. But until then, I don't know if our bosses are going to be all that comfortable putting us back on the road. And we have the playoffs coming up, and then it's really going to be more pronounced because the ratings go up where people are watching and the stakes are higher.
I will say this. I think, you know, the person who's upset always makes the most noise, right? But I think oftentimes it can be the vocal minority. I think most people understand that extraordinary circumstances are in place, are happening right now, and it's taking extraordinary actions by all the television networks and the leagues to bring us these sporting events, and we are thrilled to have them. And however they deem it's safe for you guys to call the game and the crew to do the game, I'm thrilled. I am thrilled. And I would say don't get frustrated by a few people. You know, I think what I think is good, I've heard a couple of times, you know, is when they say, hey, this is how we're doing it. So the fan doesn't go, well, God, is, you know, why is Reggie Miller, you know, talking over Kevin? Is he just a jerk, or is he, you know, you say, hey, this is, and again, guys, we're doing it here from, you know, and fess up about it. And I think everybody goes, okay, I got it. I understand. Right. Like it's yeah. Different. You know, if you're going to go to Arrowhead, it isn't going to be 72,000, but if you can get a ticket, you know, our friends at Tickets or Less hook you up and you got to go to a game and enjoy some normalish. Like, I think you appreciate all the sacrifices and the extra work everyone's doing to get it done. I know I do, you know, and certainly I'm closer to it and paying closer attention to how you guys are having to do it than maybe the average fan. But I'll bet you 90% to 95%, you know, we'll take it. We will take it, Kevin. However,
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just, but it is. I am fascinated by it. I do watch, and the broadcast nerd in me, I sit there and try to figure out, you know, what's going on and how are they doing this and everything. It's been really impressive. You hit on the college basketball, and since we're just coming off that tournament, I you get such great access and then talk to the coaches and the players and everything. What do you get a vibe the reaction is to the coaching community to see Scott Drew to get it done? We know what it's been well documented how difficult the turnaround job has been for him. But what about Scott Drew? I think he's fascinating in the sense that he's kind of remade himself about three different times, or remade his coaching style, I guess I should say, about three different times at Baylor, and finally found a formula and won a championship. And I think it's one of the more, you know, amazing coaching stories. 32 years old when he got the job, 50 when he finally cashes in. What's the coaching fraternity think of Scott Drew?
Well, I think they're really in awe of him taking the job 18 years ago and facing like as tall and as steep a mountain as you could possibly get. I think we're all pretty familiar with the story when he took over 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. Player had killed another player. It was just a litany of issues. But he took the job and decided that this was going to be his mission. And you know what's interesting? When you talk to kids, we did an Oral Roberts game. They played. Who'd they play? They played and lost on a last-second attempt. We did Oral Roberts, and we did
Arkansas, I think.
Yeah, that's right. They played Arkansas. We did that game, and then we also did Baylor against Wisconsin. So we got to do Zooms with both those coaches. You can tell immediately the people that coach at faith-based schools, like so quickly. It's stunning. If you turn down the sound and just watch the facial expression of the kids at Baylor and the coach in interviews between games, interviews after their championship win, you know, you just come away with no sound. Just like this, you know, happy, humble type of feel. I mean, you can just tell. You don't know what they're saying, but you can just tell by their facial expression. And the same with the kids down at Oral Roberts. They were very much the same way, making it as far as they did. And kind of the early, you know, Cinderella and how they had, you know, beaten some big schools to make it as far as they had. And I think there's always kind of this feel that, you know, you just subconsciously, I think, root for people like that, not because of their faith. I'm not saying that, but just because they seem to have a calm and a direction in their life, and they don't abide by a lot of rules that maybe the masses do, but they have a pretty narrow road they go down, and that includes the kind of kid they recruit, the kind of character they're looking for, the kind, because of a faith-based school, they will, you know, they gravitate toward kids that are just a little bit different. And so what is shocking is that, not shocking, but what is really unique is that this school, which had not been to a Final Four since, 1950, and had never won a championship, is coming in and doing what they did with really no history in back of them except bad history, except like some real tarnished thing. And he was able to somehow, and you talked about it, kind of connect the dots year by year and figure out a way to get the right kind of player that could play in his system, yet had some personal qualities that may be different than just your ordinary college athlete. And I think that's unique. And not saying it's right for everybody. I'm just saying that in a world with a lot of choices and a lot of channels and a lot of different things you can go to, that particular road and that particular channel has a nice feel to it. And so, you know, Gonzaga is the same way, you know, that Jesuit school, and they've got some pretty unique kids there. And you appreciated what these kids kind of go through and how they've constructed their individual lives to fit a greater whole and be a part of something that they all say almost to a man, to a kid, you know, we're just one part of this big puzzle, and but they say it with conviction and with like an integrity that you respect. And it's kind of fun to run into athletes, pro or college, that have that kind of base.
Yeah, two people that jump out at me when you say that. It's almost like that, you know, I think it puts some people off, and I think it inspires others because they seem to be able to put athletics and winning in its proper place, right? And some people, some fans who want to hear that, I'll literally do anything to win this game. That's what a fan wants to hear, right? Like I saw back and forth on Twitter. Somebody was upset, you know, yesterday Brad Keller didn't pitch well for the Royals. He played golf the day before. And so there was a fan that was upset because he golfed, right? Like he had a bad outing the time before, so golfing should be out because he pitched poorly the last time. Like life should shut down because he didn't win the game. And two people jumped to mind. One, Dayton Moore. You know, Dayton Moore is a guy, when we see people who run organizations, Dayton Moore will not tank. And I think tanking is absolutely the way to go for professional sports teams. I think, you know, acquiring as many resources as you can, and one of the ways American sports is set up is losing gets you better draft picks. And you know, getting rid of players in salary cap leagues gets you more room to maneuver. It just makes it easier. But Dayton Moore absolutely won't do it. And while I disagree with it, man, I respect the hell out of it. And the other guy, do you remember Larry Miller, the owner of the Jazz?
I sure do.
For many years. A great car mogul. He was, I don't remember if he was a member of the Mormon Church or Latter-day Saints, you know, similar, you know, offshoots of each other. And I apologize, I'm not sure the whole dynamics there. But he, the Utah Jazz, do you remember when they had Karl Malone and John Stockton? Everybody abused the IR, right? You throw a guy on IR just to kind of, you know, hold him, you know, don't let him back out there. You didn't want to make him a free agent, but he really wasn't the right guy to try to win right now. And then they'd go sign somebody else. And so everybody would just, it was just common practice that you would abuse the IR. He would not let the Jazz do that. And so I was always kind of rooting for Karl Malone and John Stockton and the Jazz and Larry Miller to win because he took the rules, even though I wanted my team, the Lakers, to do whatever it took to win. Man, I had to respect that he was a guy that, no, this is the rule. I committed to doing the rule, and I'm not going to break it because that's not the moral code I have. We need people like that in this world. I'm not saying every owner has to be that way, but you need people in this world like that, right?
Well, I do appreciate integrity, and we're not, you know, obviously the listeners know, we're not pushing any kind of thing on anyone.
No.
I just said that it is appealing to find someone with a compass that points in a very true direction. We seem to hear a lot of sordid details in the world of sports by athletes and people connected with sports, and it gets tiresome sometimes, you know. And listen, college basketball has its ills, like every sports league, male and female, all over the world. I mean, there are issues in all of them, and some are, you know, a little shady, and we all know them, and we've read about them, and they continue to pop up every once in a while. And I'm not saying that these two programs are squeaky clean. I'm just saying that when you hear, you know, such joy with an appreciation for where they are, what they've had to endure. A faith or a guide along the way that has, you know, kind of figuratively held their hand and helped them along a rugged road. I think you just naturally appreciate that kind of story. It may be a small school like Butler or a team like Gonzaga, which has had the same coach for 22 years and not been to a Final Four since 2017. Came back again this year, had been undefeated, and then to see the comments of Mark Few in a moment of real despair and disappointment, and some of the lines that I saw and heard were all full of, you know, hey, you know, the bigger picture as we widen the lens here is we had an incredible season. We lost one game to an incredibly talented team, and you know, all the accolades that they're getting, they deserve, and we appreciate what they did and,
sure.
and honor their win and all that, right? So I guess it's the romantic perhaps in me and probably a lot of people that think about sports, and you think about, wouldn't it be great in all walks of life if we all took you know, defeat so well, and if we all handled winning so well, and what I saw and heard came from Drew and some of the other people on that team about you know, how they had to rely on a lot of personal conviction along the way, picking a school like Baylor, not just this group that won the championship, but other past Baylor players that went to a program that had had this really rocky trough that they hit, and it was hard to get out of it, you know, some 20 years ago. And Scott Drew was the first in line saying, give me that challenge. I've got enough confidence and faith in what I can do and how I lead my life and what I think I can bring to a bad situation, whether he felt it was his calling or whatever he said, you know, he threw himself in that very, you know, dire strait and turned it around. Now, it took 18 years, and no one said it was going to be easy. People said it was going to be impossible. It would never happen. But sure enough, it did. And it serves as kind of a reminder that, you know what, there is no mountain too big to climb. That you stay with it and keep grinding away and doing it the right way, and you're going to find, you know, hopefully some, you know, some success at the end of it. So I saw Baylor myself. I did a game against Wisconsin in the tournament with them. Very talented, and clearly they were the better team that night. Whether they're the better team overall, hard to say. But that night they were, certainly.
We've talked about it, about how three-oriented the NBA's become. College is trending that way. We just had the best two-point team, most efficient two-point team ever, get throttled by a team that's very good from three. It's the best three-point team in the country this year. I don't know if it's the best ever, how close it'd be to the best ever. But when the best two-point team gets crushed by the three-point team the way they did, there's no coming back, right? Like, college basketball is going to be 3-and-D. I mean, it's 3-D and hit the offensive glass. That's the motto of Baylor. And that is probably going to be what the copycat approach to sports will happen. Teams will be letting the three fly, looking for athletes, second D, and crashing the offensive glass. And, you know, the Gonzaga's been a lot of fun to watch, and it's a beautiful style of basketball, the cuts, and when they come free and turn the corner and go to the hoop. But that was a big blow to the two-point basket in basketball, wasn't it?
It was, and I was probably more impressed, though, Saran, with their defense. They were so quick defensively, and they were so on top of it. Their defense was the thing that really, just stripping balls and getting steals and smothering defense, suffocating guys when they had it, whether they're in the corner on the sideline, gave them very little room to roam. And they just looked quicker and just faster. I mean, more. They looked everything. I can't help but think that even though most of the season was not spent by Gonzaga thinking about being unbeaten, I think it really laid right in front of them that game. I think they realized, or I think they began during the 24, 36 hours from winning that game over UCLA in dramatic fashion about, my God, we have a chance to do something that so few teams have ever done and go undefeated. I'm wondering if that made them a little bit tight, a little bit less free. Their passing, which had been their hallmark, was not there. You know, fighting for the best shot by good ball rotation and making the extra pass. All those things were gone. Certainly they were disrupted by the quick hands of Baylor's D, but I can't help but think that built a little bit more, and probably the most of any game, because it was right there in front of them. They could have won the championship, but on top of that, they could have been this historical team that would do something that had not been done since 1976. So there was a lot of play, and certainly not the most exciting championship game, but a lot of stories. And I guess the bottom line is, how about college basketball to pull off the bubble, get the thing through? Only one team really messed things up and had to forfeit, and Oregon moved on because of it. They were the beneficiary. And of all those kids and all those players and four different hotels and everything else, that they pulled it off. And I commend it. It was not an easy thing to do. And the thing that really stands out is that these kids really sacrificed, probably more than we'll ever know on the outside, how much they sacrificed to stay within their own team bubble and not, you know, as a 19, 20, 21-year-old kid. And it's so easy to succumb to that kind of pressure. be seduced to get out there and be with friends and go to parties and all this stuff. You know, we certainly saw cracks during the regular season, but basically none during the tournament. And that was stunning and should be applauded, I think, as much as the champion Baylor should be applauded.
Yep. I'm with you. It was amazing that they only had one game that got canceled. I would have thought that number, I think Gary Parrish put it at like 3.5 or something like that on how many games he thought we were going to lose. So it was amazing. We're talking to the great Kevin Harlan here in the program. Kevin, time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this, Kevin. Who will be better moving forward here, like start them at 0-0 right now? Chris Beard at Texas or Scott Drew at Baylor?
Oh, Scott Drew at Baylor. I'm anxious to see how Beard does. I think he fits in a interesting. I thought he was tailor made for Texas Tech. I just thought that was a personalities of both seemed to fit. He had a connection to Bob Knight and his son Pat, and I just thought it all kind of fit. Now I know he has a Texas connection too, University of Texas. I was shocked. As you and I have talked, Shaka Smart did not make it. I'm going to go with. Are you asking, will Drew continue the success, or do you think he'll be overshadowed eventually by Beard at Texas? Is that kind of your?
Yeah.
I don't know. Texas is a sleeping giant. Why it doesn't win, I do not know. I have no idea why they can't. I thought Rick Barnes would get it done. I thought Shaka Smart for sure would get it done. I don't know if this guy is much different than those two. He's kind of a combination of the two. So I'm gonna stick with Drew for right now. I think he's got some pretty good momentum, and I think people like him.
Okay. Does and no, we're not looking for. You don't have to make any comments about whether you think he's innocent or guilty or what happens. I just want your gut feeling right now. Does Deshaun Watson play in the NFL again?
Yes, I think he will.
Okay.
I mean, this is the first red flag, and there are, 23 of them that have come up here, but ever. Like, I mean, he had been squeaky clean until about a month ago. Like, this is stunning what's going on. Maybe going back 2 months when he was making rumblings about wanting to be traded and sticking to that. Something tells me he'll be back in, but boy, there's a lot going on there, and it's all uncomfortable, and it's all uncomfortable.
No, I agree. All right, you like or dislike the 17-game NFL season?
I like it. There was no need for a fourth preseason game. I think teams were not playing their starters as it was. I think the people it's going to affect the most are those fringe players. Kids, they sign off the street, but for the fan, these meaningless games were meaningless games, and this will just give more meat to the season. I my only fear is that we're going to see some load management, which you see in the NBA, and that these teams are going to be resting players even more. So that we don't know. I mean, that's yet to be seen. But I think anything to kind of cut down in the preseason was welcome. To be honest, seeing the fourth preseason game go, stick with the even number, the 16 game. But let's keep our fingers crossed on 17 games.
All right. And last, who wins a championship first? Starting now, not what's already been won. Is it Mark Few, Scott Drew, or Bill Self?
I'm going to go with Bill. I just think that they've got a deeper well to go into. And Mark Few just had his highest recruit ever, Suggs out of Minneapolis. He was Mr. Football and Mr. Basketball in the state. Great quarterback. Could have been, you know, the next, great college quarterback. Chose basketball. Highest recruit. Bill Self has had a number of the number one kids in the country go to school there, and I think he'll always have that. So I'm going to stick with Bill. I just think these blue bloods have got too much in back of them not to think that they're not going to go back again. And I would say the same for Cal at Kentucky. And I'm not sure about Hubert Davis at North Carolina. That's going to be an interesting story to watch. And I still think Krzyzewski's got a got a championship left in him too. But as of right now, I'm going to stick with Bill.
I think when we got to the Sweet 16, there were 12 teams that had never won a championship, and that door is usually far open. And when you get that opportunity, when you're not at a blue blood, you got to kick it down, and Scott Drew did. But I don't think that that door sits wide open for year after year.
I agree.
Credit Drew for what they did. Kevin, you're the best, man. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you, Saran. Always enjoy our talks. Take care.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Before Justin Rose, how many golfers had a four-stroke lead after 18 holes of a major? The answer is three. The most recent, Charlie Hoffman in the 2017 Masters, none of the three went on to win.
Yeah, it sounds like it's kind of fluky when it's all said and done. That's what you're getting there is a little bit of a fluke. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, what we are playing for. Go to joeskc.com. Order on the app. That's the easiest way to do the curbside. I'll be doing curbside tomorrow. Family's already decided Joe's Kansas City Barbecue is where we are going tomorrow for dinner. And why wouldn't you go to Joe's? Best barbecue anywhere around. And, of course, the big news, they have teamed up with King's Hawaiian for a great-tasting twist on their pulled pork Z-Man. You got to check it out. It is absolutely phenomenal. We're going to check it out on Saturday. My wife cannot wait to dig into that sandwich. We'll leave you with this as the kicker. You know, I get it that it's hard to come up with a new creative hat. Like, how much can you do with, like, for lack of a better term, a ball cap? But have you seen the draft day cap that is going to be worn by the Chiefs draft pick? I tweeted this out earlier. I remember when I saw this hat the first time, I was at a Flying J truck stop someplace in Iowa getting a Slim Jim, some beef jerky, some Chex Mix, and a soda, and it was hanging on a hat tree in front of the cigarettes but behind the cashier. Curtis, you describe it as what?
I thought it looked like the Wendy's logo. I saw the hat and wanted to get a spicy chicken sandwich and a Frosty.
I get it. It's hard to design a new hat, and maybe I'm just old, but not a fan. I'm not going to say it sucks. I'm just going to say not a fan of the draft day hat. We'll see you Monday at 2:00.